Morning. Can you hear me at the back? Jane and Drew, nod at me. Brilliant. That's good. Right. Okay. So today I'm talking to you about Jubilee. And there's a big chunk of Leviticus we're going to be looking at. Don't be too scared. I only spend the first half of the talk talking about it. But there's lots of details in Leviticus, which I'm sure are very interesting, but I've kind of focused on that kind of the bigger picture of what it's about for what it means for the Israelites at the time, what it meant for Jubilee, and also kind of what then it means for us. Right, okay, I'm going to do the first slide. I printed off my notes this morning and half of them disappeared, so I'm working from a very brief set of notes. So that might mean it's briefer, so that's a good thing, right, for everyone. Right, so when we think of Jubilee, we think of the Queen, don't we? It's only a couple of years really ago since the Jubilee, and it's so that Jubilee was like a kind of special celebration, anniversary, keys into what's happening at Hebron at the moment, isn't it, as we're celebrating our kind of 90th year. And actually, that's the reason that we've got this series on joy and celebration, is actually because we were like, oh, it'd be good to kind of mark and talk about these things as we're celebrating 90 years. That's why we've got this mini series that's kind of intersecting between Elisha. But yeah, let's have a start looking at Leviticus and really trying to dig into what Jubilee is. So I'm going to read bits. I'm going to be reading little chunks from Leviticus 25, as this is the first chunk I've kind of selected here, from 10 to 13. So, consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each of you is to return to your family property and to your own clan. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow and do not reap what grows of itself, or harvest the untended vines. For it is a jubilee, and it is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. In this year of jubilee, everyone is to return to their own property. So Mel kind of alluded a little bit before to the fact that they were meant to kind of every 7 years give the land a rest, like the Sabbath year, right? So every 7 years they were meant to do that. And then they were meant to count off kind of 7 years, 7 times 7, 49. And then the 50th year was going to be this special year, the Jubilee. And again, they were meant to, really trust that God was going to provide for them and give them like a bumper crop on, the 48th or the 49th year. So, well, every 6 years, and then also for another year for the 50th year in the Jubilee. So that kind of, last week, Helen and all that, she was talking about that idea of kind of really trusting God. So it was making me think about that. But that's not so much what I wanted to focus on. So I've highlighted here liberty and return. And when I looked at the definition of Jubilee, according to the, more than it just being an anniversary, the kind of Jewish definition is emancipation and restoration, which is emancipation, that's liberty or freedom, and restoration is return. And as I was kind of writing this definition down, because I like to write, start with a good definition when I'm doing a preach, the images that were popping into my head, I was just thinking of the prodigal son, and I thought that was kind of surprising. I didn't think I'd think of Jubilee, and I just thought it was going to be, about a celebration that happens every 50 years, but I was like, actually, emancipation and restoration, what happened with the prodigal son? Of course, he went away and then he changed his mind. He returned and was kind of welcomed back in, and I was just like, actually, that's feels like this kind of this idea of liberty and return really is tied in with Jubilee. And so like so much of the Old Testament, right, I actually think Jubilee is pointing forward to Jesus. But yeah, a little bit surprising, but we're going to dig a little bit more now into I've got to say this word a lot, so let's get it right. Leviticus now, and so I've got another section I'm going to read, and yeah, again, like thinking of that bigger picture and kind of maybe surprising things that we might be finding out about Jubilee. Okay, so 47 to 55 this time. This is my longest section, I promise you. Let me find where 47 is. If a foreigner residing among you becomes rich, and any of your fellow Israelites become poor and sell themselves to the foreigner or to a member of the foreigner's clan, they retain the right of redemption after they have sold themselves. One of their relatives may redeem them. An uncle or a cousin or any blood relative in their clan may redeem them. Or if they prosper, they may redeem themselves. They and their buyer are to count the time from the year they sold themselves up to the year of Jubilee. The price for their release is to be based on the rate paid to a hired worker for that number of years. If many years remain, they must pay for their redemption, a larger share of the price paid for them. If only a few years remain until the year of Jubilee, they are to compute that and pay for their redemption accordingly. They are to be treated as workers hired from year to year. You must see to it that those to whom they owe service do not rule over them ruthlessly. Even if someone is not redeemed in any of these ways, they and their children are to be released in the year of Jubilee, for the Israelites belong to me as servants. They are my servants, whom I brought out of Egypt. I am the Lord, your God. So I've highlighted, I don't know whether you can see all the words on the screen, this was a chunkier passage, but I've highlighted the word redeem. I kept on saying it, redeem, redeem. This person can redeem, that person can redeem. It's kind of all these rules about redeeming. And I was just kind of like, well, who's our redeemer? Our redeemer is God, isn't it? And that's the person, Jesus is the one who redeems us ultimately. And it's, you know, it says at the bottom about Israelites, the Israelites belong to me. And it's all about returning to God, really. So this was more what I was getting out of this descriptions of Jubilee. And actually just kind of thinking that, you know, it's all about slaves, these slaves, slave servants, depending on how you think about them. They'd got into a state, they'd have to sell themselves into slavery. But actually there was a way out, hopefully not 50 years if they didn't go in at the beginning, but there was like a way out for them, a way for them to kind of be saved. And it just started to get me thinking, what would that be like, a Jubilee, where everything kind of almost like a big reset button on society gives all these people a second chance. And that is like kind of like a way to kind of foundationally kind of change how society works, because you've got this kind of tool to make sure that people, if you do get really poor and in really bad ways, actually every 50 years there's a reset and you've kind of got another chance at it. So it's kind of like, I don't know, a better type or a different form of, like, I don't know, benefit system or universal credits. And so digging a little bit more into this idea, let's keep reading in Leviticus, this time 35 to 38. If any of your fellow Israelites become poor and are unable to support themselves among you, help them as you would a foreigner and a stranger, so that they can continue to live among you. Do not take interest or any profit from them, but fear your God, so that they may continue to live among you. You must not lend them money at interest or sell them food at a profit. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. So this kind of whole idea of like helping the poor is kind of like starting to, like, more details are kind of coming out in this section. Don't take interest from them, look after them, don't take advantage of them. And then there's another section here that kind of tackles another part of this. So verse 14, if you sell land to any of your own people or buy land from them, do not take advantage of each other. You are to buy from your own people on the basis of the number of years since the Jubilee. And they are to sell to you on the basis of the number of years left for harvesting crops. When the years are many, you are to increase the price. And when the years are few, you are to decrease the price. Because what is really being sold to you is the number of crops. Do not take advantage of each other, but fear your God. I am the Lord your God. It's a bit of a different kind of housing market, isn't it? Could you imagine if it was like it today? It wasn't just that the house prices seem to kind of keep going up or then crash. It's like, actually, it's all kind of calculated. It's more like a kind of like leasehold arrangement, just really, really different. And so, yeah, from Leviticus, all these bits I've kind of been drawing out, I'm trying to really kind of say that what I found from studying it is that Jubilee is not just a celebration that happens every 50 years. Actually, I think it's pointing to Jesus. And I think it's almost like a whole different worldview that God was kind of like kind of trying to set up with these laws, trying to make it fair, trying to make sure there's provision there for when stuff goes wrong for people, because it does go wrong for people. And this whole kind of like ownership model being just being really different. And he's going, you are my tenants. You don't own the land, actually. You're just kind of renting it from me for short periods, and trying to really get that, almost like that idea that it's not yours, God has given it you, almost like trying to embed it in how the Israelites kind of worked as a society. Okay, and a quick aside here, I don't know whether you would have noticed, but there's lots of bits in this, and throughout lots of law in the Bible where it says at the end of kind of like a little section, it says, I am the Lord your God. And you're like, okay, right. And then it carries on another bit and says, I am the Lord your God again. And I've always kind of been a bit like, not quite sure what that is, but this was an opportunity for me to look it up. And so apparently they think that when God kind of gave the law to Moses, it wasn't necessarily in one big sitting. So it wasn't like he gave chapter 25 all in one. It was probably in like shorter sittings, or that also at the end of each scroll, they'd kind of sign off at the end. If you ever didn't, I remember tenancy agreements, I'd have to like initial at the end of each page and then get to the end and then sign. And so it's kind of God signing off at those kind of sections, because he's the one who's got the power and the authority, he needs to sign it off because he's the king, the landlord. That's why it ends those little bits quite periodically with that. Just if that was interesting, it was interesting to me anyway, so I thought I'd share. So hopefully, yeah, we've learned some stuff about Jubilee now, hopefully a little bit of a different twist to it from maybe what we've heard before. But really, we want to think a bit about what we do when what they did when they celebrated Jubilee. What's it got to do with joy and celebration? And so really, as I've already kind of mentioned, I was thinking about it, it's kind of almost it's the festival of liberty and restoration. It's the festival of prodigals. And so I thought we'd go turn to the prodigal son for a little bit of guidance in this. So Luke chapter 15, 11 to 22. Okay. Thought I marked the wrong page then. I haven't. The parable of the lost son. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. I'm going to cut into there. I know we all know the prodigal son goes on a little bit longer than that. It's obviously a parable that's like very popular with Christians. All of us kind of have some sort of association. We kind of see ourselves as the prodigal son or as his brother as well. But yeah, the response was celebration, wasn't it? That's what God did. He got his son back, liberty and restoration. The response was to celebrate. And of course, Jesus, he's the reason, isn't he, for our celebration. He's the reason for our joy. It is him. And we've got a reason to celebrate this church for being here for 90 years. And it's super biblical that we've been doing lots of things to do with food, right? Because that's what a lot of the Jewish celebrations were like. There were so many times it was prescribed, and you go and feast. It should be when we were putting together the leaflet for the barbecue. We should have been the barbecue feast, not the barbecue lunch. But it does tell you when it is at least. But yeah, key to that prodigal is that kind of returning to God, returning to our portion in the land. And he's the one who builds our church. So we want to make sure we're kind of always really focusing on him and don't miss out on that kind of the joy that we get from Jesus. Speaking of missing out, bear with me a minute here, but Leviticus, kind of the first section I read, it covered some stuff about celebration. It said, you know, I've got to consecrate the year, so kind of like mark it in some way. It said that it was going to be a year to be holy. So I was kind of like, well, what does that look like in practice? So I'm starting to like leaf through the Bible and thinking, I feel like I know the Bible all right, but I can't really remember any reference to Jubilee that wasn't Luke 4, when Jesus speaks about it really briefly, and in Leviticus, I was like, where is this? What am I missing here? And then I was starting to think, hang on, the Israelites, from what we know about them, they weren't necessarily that good at following God's instructions. Like, when they were told not to go and collect the manna on the seventh day, they still went out to try and collect the manna, didn't they? And of course, you know, not to sag off the Israelites, because basically they're a reflection on us, right? So I was like, would we actually stick to this every 50-year thing and, like, have the effect that it has on our society? And I thought, I bet they didn't do that. I can't see that really happening. And it turns out that I was right, that they don't actually think Jubilee was ever really properly celebrated, and what impact that had on the societal things also doesn't seem to be there, or not like really clearly. And so they missed out on all of that stuff. And I suppose it makes sense that they missed it, because you need quite long, like a strong government, would you, to enforce those things. And of course, once they got into the Promised Land, once Joshua died, then it was like, oh, we mess up, we get invaded by the Philistines, and then we have a judge, yay, who comes along and helps us, and we do really well we get peace for 20 years or whatever it is, and then we mess up again. And it was like that kind of like inconsistent leadership that it's not really surprising they weren't able to kind of stick to most of the laws that God had kind of laid out, let alone these kind of like big societal kind of changes that were kind of laid out for Jubilee. And so this kind of made me think, like, are we missing out? Am I missing out? And I do feel at the moment I'm not doing a great job of kind of turning to Jesus as much as I should be on a daily kind of basis. I mean, we think of that prodigal son, don't we, as like a really big event. He obviously knew God to start with, then went away and then came back into the fold. But I think we're really called to be coming back to God all the time, aren't we? That's kind of part of repentance, isn't it? Is that we come back to Jesus all the time. So am I missing out? And then, I'm not sure you can see that too well at the moment, but the Northern Lights. I was so, so gutted to wake up that morning. Was it a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning? And to like have all these images on my phone of my cousins in the Isle of Man, and like with all these amazing photos of the Northern Lights. And I was like, oh, generally so disappointed by that. I really missed out. And I don't always, but sometimes get that strong feeling about when people don't know God. I am like, oh, you're missing out on Jesus. You're missing out on getting to know Jesus and knowing him. And I think the Jubilee and the Old Testament, it points to Christ so much, doesn't it? And then the New Testament is all about, it's all focused on Jesus and what he did and looking into that. And so I think we should go to Jesus before I finish speaking. Luke 4 was a bit I just kind of referenced, and I'll read the section now, 16 to 20. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." I always think there's such a mic drop kind of moment in that, where everyone's just kind of like looking at him. What's he going to say about this? And he's proclaiming himself as a Jubilee. They'd missed out on it. They'd not done that celebration every 50 years. They'd not kind of taken in that part of God's law and applied it. And he's there going, "I am the Jubilee. I am the liberty and restoration that you've been missing." Whether they all got that from what he said, I don't know. But proclaiming the year of proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. That's a reference, meant to be a reference to Jubilee. So I've got a little summary side here, which I think I've said this quite a lot, so hopefully you've got it anyway. I started off with it right at the beginning, really, saying that it really points to Jesus. But yeah, we don't want to miss out on the party, really. But I've got a little something else I think I've got kind of time to add here. So, oh man, I've not marked that one out. I'll have to find it in a second. So Jesus there was reading from Isaiah. which luckily I found quickly. And he reads kind of, it's Isaiah 61, and he reads verse 1 and a bit of verse 2. And obviously it makes sense, you know, where he stopped, right? Because proclaim the year of the Lord's favour, that's great. But actually there's a bit more, that kind of section in that kind of little bit, which I kind of read and then thought I'd kind of look at with you guys. So he said to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour, and I've lost where I am already, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendour. So I've kind of highlighted two bits here. So I've got to talk about the spirit of despair. So despair I kind of see as being like the opposite to joy. And then a planting of the Lord. I'll explain why now. So on Monday evening, our home group met, and Rachel Jefferson said that when she'd been here last week and been out in the garden, they were kind of like looking to prepare for the barbecue, making everything was going to be safe for everyone. And she said that she got like a real strong feeling that it was a time of germination for the church. And so I looked at the definition of germination. So it's the process by which a plant grows from a seed into a seedling. Seeds remain dormant until conditions are favourable for germination. And all seeds need water, oxygen and optimal temperature to germinate. And I wanted to mention this a little bit. One, because hopefully it's a hopeful and encouraging thing. But also, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but sometimes I think when we reflect on 90 years, occasionally there's a bit of almost like a little bit of a sense of negativity, that there was this kind of like heyday of Ernest Dyer and kind of, oh, what's happened to the church now? And so I kind of wanted to end on this kind of message of hope to kind of replace any type of despair that there is, that actually we really need to be hoping and believing that God is the one who's going to be planting us and causing germination to happen. And yeah, just trusting in him for that, really. I'm just going to pray to close us. Lord, thanks that you are the one who is our saviour and restorer, and that it's not a one-time thing or something that happens every 50 years, that it's constant, that you are there providing restoration for us, and like help us to keep coming back to you. Lord, if there's any kind of dormancy in that's happening on our hearts, I suppose we welcome you, invite you in to set us up for germination. But help us to kind of wait hopefully and be ready to hear you and kind of feel the joy that is in knowing you, Lord. Amen.